Welcome to SciShow Tangents, the lightly competitive knowledge showcase starring some of the geniuses that make the YouTube series SciShow happen. This week, as always, I'm joined by Stefan Chin.
Hello.
Stefan, how do you like the cover of my new book?
Oh, it's good.
A beautifully foolish endeavor.
It's the best cover I've ever seen.
Thanks.
It'll be out
July 7th, but you can pre-order it now.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. What's your tagline?
It's almost wing night.
And Sam Schultz is also here. Sam.
Yeah?
Where
oh, no.
can you pre-order my new book, A Beautifully Foolish Endeavor?
I don't know. Am I going to get in trouble for not knowing?
No, you just guess some places that might have it.
Amazon.com?
Yeah, it's there.
Your local bookstore?
Uh-huh.
Anywhere a fine book is sold?
That's correct. What's your tagline?
A beautifully foolish endeavor.
Wow.
Hi, Sarah. It's great to see you.
Oh, thanks.
What's your favorite book?
Oh.
Don't get this wrong.
I feel like I'm reserving the top book spot for A Beautifully Foolish Endeavor, which is coming out July 2020.
I think we're going to get in trouble.
What do you mean?
I don't know. We're probably fine.
Yeah, if you guys have a book coming out, we can dedicate a whole intro of tangents to yours as well.
Oh, my God. All right.
What's your tagline?
Water casket.
And I'm Hank Green, and my tagline is, woo! Every week here in SciShow Tangents, we get together to try to one-up, amaze, and delight each other with science facts. We're playing for glory, but we're also keeping score and awarding Sam bucks from week to week. We do everything we can to stay on topic, but if we go on a tangent, which we very well may, the rest of the team gets to vote on whether or not it was worth it. And if it isn't, then you have to give up a Sam buck. And now, as always, to introduce this week's topic, we have the traditional science poem. This week, it's part poem by me, part poem by someone else. So it starts out with a different person's poem, and then we segue.
Yeah, this is great.
Music is a lot like love. It's all a feeling, and it fills the room from the floor to the ceiling. I see miracles all around me. Stop and look around, it's all astounding. Water, fire, air, and dirt. Fucking magnets. How do they work? Thus spoke the men of the Insane Clown Posse. They go on to say that they will not trust me. Scientists are lying. Scientists get them pissed. But I think the ICP, well, a couple points they missed. Forces are a kind of miracle, these connections we cannot see. They drive the entire universe from Betelgeuse to me. And when you send an electron down a wire, it does seem odd that fields arise, fields that never tire. I know that science has answers, but after all these years on Earth, I still sit here and ask, Sari, fucking magnets, how do they work?
Oh my gosh, cameo by Beetlejuice in there,
yeah,
too.
Beetlejuice the star.
I know, but come on.
I also got distracted. Beetlejuice. We said it only once, but now collectively we said it three times.
I have a hard time with magnets on it. I guess I have a hard time with all forces, though.
Yeah.
Like, it just feels like gravity makes sense because I've always, like, I feel it all the time, but it doesn't really. Doesn't make any more sense than magnets. But magnets, I'm just like, I can't see it, and yet they're interacting.
And it make things don't go down that you feel like should go down, like gravity.
It make things don't go down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Magnets Absolutely. Go on the wall.
Yeah.
Shouldn't work.
Stay there. They should go down.
Yeah. I feel like that was a mini poem from Sam.
I think I know how magnets work, and so I will talk and explain them. But as soon as someone asks me a question, it's going to fall apart.
Okay, so we'll all just be no very questions. Quiet.
So a magnet mm-hmm. is an object mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. a piece of technology that we've created that gives off a magnetic field, and it applies a force on things like other magnets. So magnets can either be natural. Mm-hmm. An iron-containing compound called magnetite is a natural magnet, and this is where it gets wibbly. There are parts of it, mm-hmm. like very small parts of it, that when aligned, generate a magnetic field. So like when you draw a magnetic field, you draw it as like, if it's a circle and the north pole's on the top and the south pole's on the bottom, it like comes out of the north and then goes into the south.
Uh-huh.
And that is how you draw a magnetic field. If those particles or electrons or whatever physics-y mm-hmm. is happening inside the rock are aligned in some direction, that is like the direction the magnetic field will mm-hmm. align. Mm. But if they're randomized, so if it's just like a nail with randomly oriented particles, then it will not be magnetic.
Okay. Is that... Sorry, I'm going to ask a question.
Go for it.
Is it that there's no magnetic field because there's a bunch of magnetic fields that are canceling out? And then when they do align, they all add together and create something that affects things?
Yes.
Okay.
So it's like atoms or
particles
or electrons or some sort of like subatomic atomic particle have what are known as magnetic moments.
Beautiful.
Like how a molecule can be a dipole and have a charged end. They can also have a magnetic moment, which is like a magnetic field in some direction. And so when they're all misaligned, then there's no strong field in any direction. Okay. But if they're all aligned in one, then it like accumulates in a giant magnetic field.
So like with an electromagnet, is it something that you turn the power
That's
off?
That's a totally separate thing.
Oh, it is?
So electromagnets...
Well, it's not a totally separate thing. But like, still magnets.
But like the power's off and they're all not aligned, and then the power's on and they go zoop.
So with an electromagnet, it is a coil of wire around a, like a piece of iron or something like that. Uh-huh. And in that, the electric current is generating the magnetic field.
Oh. So it's actually the electrons passing through the wire. When you push electrons through a wire, they create a magnetic field around them.
Okay.
But magnetism and electricity are different.
Well, technically, they're the same thing if you go deep enough.
So like there's Faraday's law, I think, which is how it relates it. Like your E field is your electric field and your B field is your magnetic field. And there's a relationship between those things.
It's like how energy and mass are the same thing.
There's
but not
too much
like that.
Stuff too out much. There.
We got to give up
we gotta
on science.
We got to rewrite all the rules. That's why there's like new editions of board games and stuff. You get rid of the rules that are just too complicated.
You can't keep track of all those rules.
Yeah.
That's right. We have to do that with magnets.
Okay.
You're just.
I'm magnets, ready. You're done. We don't need you.
You're no longer supported.
Sari, is there an etymology to magnets?
There is, and it's kind of cool. So it comes from the old French magnet. Maybe, which is magnetite, which is from Latin magnetum, which is from Greek, ho magnus lithos, the magnesian stone. There's a region in Greece called Thessaly, and then there's a sub-region of that called Magnesia, where they found lodestones.
Okay.
And so they were like, this rock from this place is so cool. And so it's named after a place.
Oh my gosh.
All magnets.
That's amazing. That's my favorite part of the show.
And now it's time for... One of our panelists has picked three science facts for our education and enjoyment, but two of those are fake. So you didn't really pick them. You just created them out of your head. The other panelists have to figure out either by deduction or wild guess which is the true fact. And if we get it right, we get the Sam Buck. If not, Sam gets the Sam Buck because Sam is doing truth or fail.
Magnets, frankly, seem pretty miraculous. Am I right? So it's not really a big surprise that many people throughout history have believed them to have healing or spiritual powers. This belief has led to a variety of inventions claiming to cure people of any ailment you can think of, physical, mental, anything in between, using magnet magic. So these are all real, quote, inventions, but only one of them actually used magnets. So which was it? Number one. A large console filled with knobs and dials, sort of like an electric organ, which sold for home use in the 1960s and cost $3,500, that claimed to use magnetic fields to analyze and diagnose blood samples, and then you could tune it to shoot out a magnetic field that would cure you.
Ooh, Theranos.
Two. Yeah. A helmet invented in the early 2000s that generates an electromagnetic field that, when worn, would disrupt communication between the left and right side of your brain, allowing the creative right side to take control, which allowed users to perceive an otherworldly presence that was said to be God. Or three, a magnet-lined water jug sold in the early 1900s that claimed to refresh water by pulling toxin and other undesirable elements from it. The makers claimed that it would cure flatulence, senility, arthritis, and more.
Okay, so we've got three things here. Things that inventions, quote, inventions.
Well, I guess they were inventions. They just didn't work.
Right. at least ideas. Something from the 1960s that used magnetic fields to analyze your blood sample and then send you a magnetic field to cure you. Two, a helmet that separated your brain hemispheres. Uh-huh. This was in the early 2000s that let you see God. Or in the early 1900s, a magnet-lined water jug that pulled out toxins and cured your flatulence. magnets have kind of always been around. So was there a big peak in magnet crazes? But I think now I wouldn't be surprised if there was a magnet-lined water bottle. Yeah. Because we're always sort of waving our hands over water and being like, things happened.
Water especially now for some reason. Let's find a way to make this more expensive and exclusive.
Right.
We were fooled by Tom Brady's water, fake water.
It was pants.
It was pants instead.
There are quartz water bottles with crystals inside of them. That's cool.
Love a crystal. I believe
that.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to say the brain helmet because
I like the brain
helmet. I'm just going to take a stab about it just because it's like your brain has electricity. So I can assume that putting magnets near it, it's not bad. It's good.
Right. And I was alive then, but I'd still forget about it because what a boring thing to have happen. Mm-hmm. And also the early 2000s were a busy time for me.
Now I think both of you might know something.
I guess I wouldn't say, but no.
I would have been more cryptic. I think I would have made you guess first. I make other people
guess
first.
That's often what I do when I know, is I make the other people guess first.
But then I'm usually wrong, so nothing matters.
Indeed.
Well, I'm going to go with the blood magnet.
Blood magnet for Stefan. Sari?
Brain magnet.
I'm going to go with brain magnet, too.
It was brain magnet.
Oh, yeah!
You bastards. I quit. I'm not doing the show anymore.
You got a point.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. Maybe Stefan won't get any points this episode. And then I'll be happy.
Wow.
So I'll start with the real one. The God Machine is what it was called.
Oh.
And it seems to have started as a pretty, normal experiment to study a link between forms of epilepsy and religious visions, quote religious visions, so near-death experiences, things like that, that would make you see the tunnel to heaven or something. Mm-hmm. So people with temporal lobe epilepsy seem to frequently report that the feeling of not being alone while having a seizure. So this device was supposed to replicate a safer version of that, but in tests the researchers reported that 80% of subjects felt an unexplained presence nearby, but there are a lot of other things, a lot of other experiments that couldn't replicate this at all. Mm-hmm. And there was a placebo experiment that did replicate it. So, but now they sell, some of the people who did these experiments sell consumer versions for meditation and for helping you see God, but they're also supposed to be able to change your emotional state with the push of a button. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
I can change my emotional state with the push of a button already. It's called Twitter.
It's
many things flashed through my mind. None of them was Twitter.
And I can imagine people around me, if I just turn off all the lights in my house and something creaks, then I'm like, that's it, it's a murderer.
That's you changing your emotional state.
Or God.
Or God. Yeah, I guess I always assume it's a murderer.
The large console with knobs was a consumer thing called the electrometabograph, which was a home appliance that you would have in your house, and you would put your blood in it and it would give you a diagnosis by blinking different lights on the front that was kidney bad or something like that. And then it was a radio, so you would tune it to a frequency that would shoot healing waves into you. But the FDA caught wind of it, opened it up, and there wasn't anything in it except for a blinking light. There wasn't even a radio. Not even a radio inside. But they sold a ton of them, I think. I don't think they ever even really found out who was doing it. And then the water jug was a jug lined with uranium called the Revigorator. It would irradiate your water and bring back the, quote, lost element of original freshness, radioactivity.
Oh, it's called the Revigorator?
Uh-huh.
I like that. Yes. That's very good. I really, I would totally buy a Revigorator.
Yeah.
If it didn't have any uranium
You're in luck because you can still buy one that has uranium that still works. So.
Still trademarked because you could just make the Revigorator water bottle.
Yeah.
And put whatever you want, crystals.
Go to SciShow.com where we're now selling the Revigorator.
A blinking light, that could be what's in there.
Oh, it could be a water bottle with a blinking light.
Yeah.
And it could just be
fresh.
When it blinked on, photons. It would be done. It would just say done.
Bing!
So they did some studies with these jugs that still have working uranium.
Oh, yeah,
and
I see one.
They leach a ton of arsenic and lead into the water. Because so I guess the they were just problem. Not very well made. Uh-huh. And they also release enough radiation to be like almost double the EPA suggested level of exposure.
Oh, so it's like, it's not like a water bottle. It's not personal. It's like.
No, you have it in your house ceramic. For your whole family to drink out.
Reinvigorate your whole family.
Yeah. Right. No, it's called the Revigator, boy.
Oh, the Revigator? Well, not a real word either way.
No. Well, now we're definitely in the clear for Revigorator. Yeah. Well, Sam, thank you for the wonderful facts.
No, thanks for guessing right. I even made a kind of a bullshit one so that I could get some easy points. Didn't even work.
Next up, we're going to take a short break, then the fact off. Welcome back, everybody. Sam Buck total. Sari's got one. Sam's got one. Stefan's got none. Mm. I've got two because of my good, good poem that I am so proud of.
You got to mail it to the ICP, though.
What I will say is that song ultimately, like, there's a little bit of, like, antagonism towards science, but mostly it's a song about, like, appreciating how beautiful and weird the world is. Mm-hmm. I like that they, like, call out dirt as a miracle. It's like, yeah, I think that we don't recognize that dirt is really wonderful and complex, and
it does show like a certain like reflection and way of thinking about things.
Yeah,
that I appreciate.
I appreciate it. Anyway, now it's time for the fact off. Two panelists have brought science facts to blow the other panelists' minds, and we each have a Sam Buck to award to the one that we like the most. And we're going to choose whether Stefan or Sari goes first with this trivia question: the temperature at which magnets lose their permanent magnetic properties is called the Curie temperature.
That's
which
the only thing I knew.
Curie is it named for?
Oh.
I can give you multiple choice if you don't know.
Murray.
That's the only Curie that I know.
Okay, well, then it's not that. So the ones you have left are Eve, Irene, or Pierre. Three, two, one.
Pierre.
Oh, crap.
Shoot.
They're both right.
Oh.
Can you guess what the temperature is?
Yeah. Oh, it's different for every thing. But
great.
So what's the Curie temperature of gadolinium in Kelvin?
Oh, in Kelvin?
It's not going to increase or decrease the odds of getting it right.
352.
That is a temperature that exists.
Yes.
Good job.
565.
293.
Ooh.
Gadolinium is a weak one. Nickels, for example, is 627.
Okay.
Well, how much Kelvin is that? Is that like hot as the sun or what?
293 is like cold.
Zero Kelvin is absolute zero.
So gadolinium's Curie point is 67 degrees Fahrenheit. So you were closer, Stefan.
Well, Sari, you're up.
Oh.
Okay. The Earth has a magnetic field generated by the sloshing core.
Yep.
Or the molten stuff around the core.
Supposedly.
And that magnetic field changes.
Mm-hmm.
And the Earth's north magnetic pole, where magnetic compasses point north, is not the same place as the geographic North Pole. And in fact, the North Magnetic Pole was first formally described in 1831, but it's been on the move and has traveled over 2,250 kilometers, or 1,400 miles, since then. In the past couple decades, it's been traveling at a rate of around 55 kilometers, or 34 miles per year, and now at around 40 kilometers, or 24 miles per year. And it's drifting from over Canada towards Siberia and Russia. And that's, like, not insignificant at all. That's a lot. And so the U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, works with a lot of data and groups to maintain a tool called the World Magnetic Model, or WMM, that gets updated every 5 years. And so 2020 is out now. You can go look at it. to help everything that uses the magnetic field, from compasses to maps to GPS services and other electronic navigation tools. And critically, airplanes and airports fall under this umbrella and use the WMM because planes have to know where they're flying and they use the magnetic field to help them navigate. And so without going into too much detail, runways have numerical names from 1 to 36 to indicate the cardinal direction, rounded to the nearest 10 degrees. So 180 degrees becomes 18, 360 degrees becomes 36, 18 is the north magnetic pole, and 36 is the south magnetic pole, and everything's like relative mm-hmm. to that. So in 2009, the Fairbanks International Airport in Alaska had to rename their runway 1L19R to 1L, or 2L20R, I think, or 1L20R. Ooh, had to rename their runway because magnetic north shifted, and they'll have to do so again in 2033 as predicted by these models. So that means replacing all the signage, repainting, pilots have to relearn
can't they
the
just
codes.
Do those ones where you can switch out the numbers and letters?
I mean,
then you don't have to
the ground
it.
Too. And that's because when the magnetic field gets messed up over time, or even like there have been instances with where it gets messed up locally over airports, it can really mess with navigation and takeoff and landing of planes, so they can like get near misses to each other, or they could just be like headed in the wrong direction, which is an uncertainty you don't want to introduce for an already very mathematically complicated system. So as the magnetic field changes, we have to change all our airports.
Do they monitor the magnetic field or whatever around like every airport just in case something goes wild? Or
so the World Magnetic Model models it everywhere in the world using data, and so you can point, you can put in whatever coordinates you want and know what the magnetic field is doing at that point on Earth, which is very cool. Mm-hmm.
Stefan, can you beat drifting runway magnetic fields causing havoc to air travelers?
Let's find out. So fluids don't normally react to magnetic fields, but ferrofluids, when exposed to magnetic fields, form spiky hedgehog formations. Mm-hmm. Have you all seen these?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the way that ferrofluids work is that you have like a base fluid, which could be water, could be other things. And you mix in small magnetic particles. And then to keep those particles suspended in the liquid, you have to coat them with a surfactant. Okay. And so like one side of the surfactant is attracted to the particle, so it coats them all. And then the other side is attracted to the water or whatever the solvent is. And that keeps them suspended and prevents them from clumping together. So then you get this liquid that has weird magnetic properties.
Cool, yeah.
And apparently most commonly these days they use ferrofluids for speakers.
Oh, I thought they just used them to look at.
No, they're used in manufacturing for different things, but speakers is the most common thing. So it like cools the voice coil and also dampens some of the vibration in those, which I thought was a cool thing that I didn't know. But one potential application for these fluids is as a thruster for satellites. Smaller satellites are becoming more common, and that's small satellites is anything under 1,100 pounds, apparently. Which still seems pretty big, but I guess some satellites are pretty heavy. And a lot of the technology for satellites has shrunk, like the cameras and GPS systems and all that stuff. So they've been able to be much smaller, but it's harder to make small propulsion systems so that they can relocate themselves in low Earth orbit or adjust like where which direction they're looking. One of the promising kinds of propulsion that I think has been used is electrospray propulsion. And for that, they have, you have like maybe 100 or so of these tiny needles. And then you have like an ionic fuel and you apply electricity to it. And then it shoots this fuel out in a little stream of particles and that pushes the satellite. But those systems are kind of expensive to make and they're apparently pretty fragile, so they break easily. So this team at Michigan Technological University has been working on an ion thruster using ferrofluids. And so it's an ionic ferrofluid. And when they apply the magnetic field, they get all the little spiky spikes. And then when they apply an electric field on top of that, each needle can start spraying little jets of ions, which are the particles that make up the ferrofluid. So the ferrofluid, when these fields are applied, self-assembles into the thruster and then is also the fuel for the thruster, which is why this
becomes its own thruster.
Yeah. And if you like smash it with a hammer, like it just reforms, I guess, based on the like magnetic field lines or whatever.
It's just T-1000 over here.
It's T-1000
All those
thrusters.
Aliens with hammers out there smashing up our satellites.
We're going to get them.
We got one over on them finally.
Can we make other things that reform like that so that we can hit more things with hammers and have them reform?
Yeah,
I guess my bones.
I guess it comes down to like how carefully you can control the shape of a magnetic field.
Yeah.
Which you can't do anything with a magnetic field. What if I drank a ferrofluid?
Ferrofluid enemas, and then you use a magnet to just shh it all out.
Just grab yourself out. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, like little fish tank magnet. Magnet.
So, like, over your belly, back and forth. Mm-hmm. This is great.
Oh, God, I hate it so much. Okay. Sam and I have to decide which of these facts we want to give our point to. 3, 2, 1, Stefan.
Oh.
I expected that.
Brutal.
I'm cleaning house.
I shouldn't have even given you a damn
point. I thought for sure Sam was going to go for Sari because...
I'm strictly bound by my honor code. I'm devoted to truth and justice.
Thank you. Thank you for being devoted to truth and justice.
I love that.
Now it's time for Ask the Science Couch. We've got some listener questions for our couch of finely honed scientific minds. This question comes from @LuxInTheLight. Is it actually possible for something to make magnets stop working, like in Stranger Things? I just got spoiled on Stranger Things, like just this very moment. So I guess at some point, for some reason, all magnets stop working.
I don't. So like from the article I read. Oh, have you actually seen season 3?
I've seen it. It basically boils down to at some point, for some reason, this happens. And I don't remember the answer or anything, but they're just at their house and then all the magnets fall off their fridge.
Oh, okay.
So it's very localized. Magnets just fall off a fridge.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, I mean, what could happen is if you have a big magnetic field that comes through, you could... Yeah. The magnets wouldn't necessarily be permanently demagnetized, but you could definitely push them off the fridge.
Mm, okay.
So you like counteract the effect. And that would be a creepy thing to have happen.
Yeah, I mean, that's like kind of it. So heat, like in the trivia question, is one way to mess with the magnetic field because if you apply heat to a magnet, then the alignment of particles gets misaligned because heat is just like movement energy.
Mm-hmm.
The way that they explain it in the show, according to a Wired article from someone who actually watched it, Winona Ryder was like, oh no, my fridge magnets fell on the floor. And then she found the science teacher and he was like, I can tell you about this.
The science teacher who's a beloved character from season 1.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. But she like read some books about physics and then talked to him and he was like, look at this thing called a solenoid, which is a cylindrical coil of wire that can generate a magnetic field. So basically like an electromagnet without the thing inside.
Mm.
And so it can also create a static magnetic field. Then, like, the science in the show gets a little wibbly, I think, where he was like, if someone created a giant version of this, then anything could happen. Or, like, this could happen.
We've surrounded the entire community with a solenoid and just, like, pumped a lot of electrons through it.
I think that is actually what it was. It was the mall or something. I don't know.
So, like, the thing that you can do is disrupt the magnetic field somehow. So I don't think, like, applying a constant magnetic field to the magnets on the fridge would necessarily mess them up completely. It'd have to be, like, an alternating current. Mm. If you put in an alternating current, then that also creates, like, a changing intensity magnetic field.
Mm-hmm.
And that could, like, mess with the alignment of the particles enough to demagnetize something.
Oh. Is that something that can happen?
Yes.
If you did it on purpose, not like
if
by
you did it on purpose. Yeah. Right. If the magnetic object has what are known as deformable domains, so like iron or steel or other things, like if you magnetize a nail, you can demagnetize it. Things like neodymium are much stronger magnets. And so I think, though, that alignment is more locked into place. Mm. And so for that, you need a more extreme thing than like an alternating magnetic field to scramble it. You need like a really, really high temperature or something that will actually disrupt its pretty stable structure. The more like temporarily magnetic something is, the easier it is to disrupt the magnetic field. So like if you magnetize a nail, you can like hit it with a hammer and disrupt it because that is enough force to mess with the alignment.
Oh,
just so many things with hammers today.
So wait, now the other day a fridge magnet fell on my phone and I got scared. Is that something I should still be scared
about?
I don't
have to worry about that so much. A really powerful magnet on a hard drive, definitely be worried about.
Okay. Feels like something that kids in the early 2000s and the 90s and stuff, magnets should be nowhere near your personal computer. Okay.
Also, solid state is a totally different technology we use mostly now, but I still wouldn't want a big, strong magnet around my electric equipment.
Okay. That's it. Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about magnets.
It's
gonna
be okay.
If you want to ask the Science Couch, follow us on Twitter @SciShowTangents, where we will tweet out topics for upcoming episodes every week. Thank you to @SheSaidZed, @AlysMyers, and everybody else who tweeted us your questions this week. Sam Buck, final scores. Sari and Sam tied with one. Hank and Stefan tied with two.
Ooh, boo.
Ooh, ooh, boo.
Ooh, boo.
If you like the show and you want to help us out, it's really easy to do that. First, you can leave us a review wherever you listen. That helps us know what you like about the show, and we look to iTunes reviews for topic ideas for future episodes, so you can leave those there. Second, you can tweet out your favorite moment from the episode. And finally, if you want to show your love for SciShow Tangents, just tell people about us. SciShow Tangents is a co-production of Complexly and the wonderful team at WNYC Studios. It's greeted by all of us and produced by Caitlin Hoffmeister and Sam Schultz, who also edits a lot of these episodes along with Hiroko Matsushima. Our editorial assistant is Deboki Chakravarti. Our sound design is by Joseph Tuna Medish. Our social media organizer is Victoria Bongiorno, and we couldn't make any of this without our patrons on Patreon. Thank you, and remember, the mind is not a vessel to be filled, but a fire to be lighted.
But one more thing. Fecal incontinence happens where patients can't control some part of their anus and flow of poop anymore.
Yeah, that's one of the main things I want to avoid in my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so one solution if this happens to you is a magnetic anal sphincter.
Ooh.
With yes. Magnetic titanium beads on a titanium string.
It's implanted in myself?
Yes, that keep the opening closed unless you push poop through it. The procedure, according to this, only takes about 45 minutes in one overnight hospital stay.
Whoa.
So very minimally really cool. Invasive surgery.
That's awesome.
Yeah, apparently it's just as good as
pooping.
Pooping? Yeah, and there's something else. Some other, like, sphincter replacement.
Mm. Can I get a different animal sphincter?
Oh!
I want a pig butt.
Cow butt?
No, I want little poops.
Yeah, I want little rabbit droppings.
Yeah. Is that how it works? Is that how I can get little poops? I need a really tiny butthole.
You should get a wombat butthole, then.
Yeah.
Ooh! So you can have square poops.
Oh, yeah. Square poops.
Okay.
No, I want it to be like that attachment on the Play-Doh
pump. Play-Doh machine, exactly.
Where it's just like, you get, like, a bunch of little spaghetti strings.
And you're like, today I feel like stars.
I want rigatoni today.
Oh, no.